Good evening, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday, January 14, 2007. During our broadcast, you may reach us via AIM phone at 903-551-2186. If you are listening via our Blog Talk Radio website, simply dial the number on the screen. At any time, please send your comments and questions to comments@libertytalkradio.com. We'd love to hear from you, and we will try to answer your questions during our next broadcast. Folks, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio, where you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, Rome, Paris, or Stalingrad. We must take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our liberty, and our rights. It's time to shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And I hope on this snowy day here in Tulsa finds you well. This evening, we shall discuss the subject of liberty, which we always talk about, and in its context, is it a zero-sum game? Now, the reason why I wanted to bring that up in that fashion was because there is a widely accepted perception that whenever the government enacts some sort of legislation, either to control or to regulate or to intrude or to involve itself, our liberties remain intact. But this is the way it really works in real life. Liberty in and of itself is in fact a zero-sum game. That means that if you had 100% of your liberties that you're entitled to, that means the government has none. Now, every time the government enacts some sort of legislation to control, to prohibit, or to regulate, some of that our liberties are eroded. So instead of having 100% in zero or 99% in one, whatever the situation is when we first started here in this country, you'll find that then the government has maybe a couple of more percent, takes a couple of percent of that liberty, and that comes from us as an individual. Now, the question is, you know, in a zero-sum game, that means everything has to equal, you know, 100%. You know, whatever goes to one is taken from another. There's no increasing the pie, basically. The question today is, in this zero-sum game of liberty, how much have we retained relative to what the Constitution allows us to have as individuals? Now, I will be honest with you, I haven't the foggiest idea. But let's go back to the earliest days of this country. We will find that it was based on individual rights, individual responsibility. The government, in fact, was supposed to be so far from the tentacles of government, so far from the individual, that they actually placed in the Constitution that the Congress had to meet at least once a year, second week in December, because they assumed they had no responsibilities. They really weren't supposed to be doing much anything at all other than keeping this federation of states, so to speak, together, this union of states together, and to ensure that they at least met once a year and got together and did something, that they had to meet the second week in December for one day. And look at where we've come from that to where we are today. On a daily basis, legislation is being presented, not always approved, but at least being presented or proposed. The government, the executive branch, must sign executive orders by the dozen every day, telling us what we can and cannot do. And as a result, every time this happens, some of our liberties are eroded. Well, if we compare to where we were, where there was no federal involvement whatsoever, and the federal government's only role, and still the federal government's only role, is to ensure that our liberties, our rights, and our freedom are protected in the event of a foreign attack, we should have some sort of standing army, or we should be able to group together to ward off the enemy. We are supposed to have a court system and a rule of law. None of that intrudes on our liberties. When the barbarians are at the gate, you know, and we have to get together and, you know, pick up our guns and muskets and whatever, and run to the shores and to protect our country, yeah, that may reduce our liberties as far as we can't go and do our job every day, but without that, we're going to get shot anyway, so we got to protect ourselves. That's self-defense. So you can almost say that in the beginning, we were almost 100% and the government was near zero. If you look at it from that context, where are we today? Is it closer to 50-50, or does the government have the edge? Well, I don't know the answer to that question. But I wanted to plant that seed only because when you hear our legislators, talk about what they are going to do for us and how they're going to lead this country, I want you to think of loss of liberty, loss of freedom, loss of rights, degrading the Constitution every time. I want you to think that way because that's what actually happens. Now, you know, I'm not too happy with people who are progressives or collectivist, and I've had a couple of programs regarding that. And it really bothers me that collectivists, and that's what they are call themselves progressives, because that's a nicer term, but they're really Democrats. I went to a meeting once, and it was a Progress Now meeting, and they had a very interesting speaker, and I went, and I was solicited to join the organization. And I said, I don't know who you guys are. And they said, well, we're progressives. I said, well, what does that mean? And the bottom line was, it's the Democratic Party. She said, well, basically, we're the Democratic Party. I said, well, why don't you just say so? Now, they're Democratic parties, and they're what I call new liberals. The old liberals, I'm an old liberal. I believe the old liberals were the constitutionists, people who believed in the Constitution. The new liberals sort of believe in the Constitution, but that the government has to control everything. They're really socialist. The new liberals are socialist. The old liberals are individualist. They're libertarians, and I'm a libertarian. And so here we have collectivists calling themselves as progressives because they don't want to be called liberals, and they definitely don't want to be associated as Democrats. I mean, why don't you just say what you want? We're the Democratic Party that we have repackaged ourselves. Now, I think they are particularly dangerous because they're so nice. And I, as I said before, most of my very, very close friends are progressives, very nice people. And they honestly think that they're doing good because they want to help. They want to be compassionate. They want to make sure the world is safe, and which all means that we lose our rights, we lose our freedoms, and we lose our liberty. But they don't look at it that way. They figure, well, they're still, that's the price that you have to pay. They have to pay, not me. Don't include me on that. And it really bothers me because we're sucked into this aura of goodness and collective will. I like the word the collective will of the people. Do you know nothing gets done with collective will? You ever go to a meeting? You ever have a committee do anything? Committees never have accomplished anything. It was always the individual. And libertarians are individuals. If you work for a large corporation, you know every time there is a committee, nothing gets done. Everything gets watered down. Everything's fine. Problem never solved. Same thing with government. Same thing. But yet, you'll find that renegade person, they may quit the company, start a new company, put the old company out of business single-handedly. That's who we are. That's a libertarian. A libertarian's a true patriot. And here we are. We have a call coming in. Oops. Yes, you're on it. Did I do this thing wrong? Oops. I'm not sure. We have a new phone system here, and I'm not certain how we're going to do this. Hello, you're on the air. I guess we have a problem. I think I just hung up on someone. Someone had just called in, and I have some mail here, and I can't handle the whole thing. This is really neat. Okay. All right. Well, I'm awfully sorry. If I hung up on you just now, here's another call coming in. There's the telephone. And you're on the air.
Joe.
Yes, sir.
Oh, hey. Oh, from Citizen for you.
I'm awfully sorry. Could you please repeat that?
My name is Samuel. I'm with the Citizens Advocate.
Oh, Citizens Advocate, okay. And I'm sorry, I didn't...
online talk, though, as well. And I've been following recent news. What is your take on the announcement coming from Ron Paul's regarding 2008?
I didn't catch your first name because your phone is breaking up. It's either your phone or my phone. I hate to blame anybody on that, but you're breaking up on me. I heard you say, what is my opinion of Ron Paul's, and I lost the rest of that.
Can you hear me? Are you hearing me okay now?
Yes, I'm still losing you. I heard, for example, can you hear, and then you went dead.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I was listening to a couple of those, and they were having trouble with phones as well.
All right, could you please repeat
your... I'm going to hang up and call you right back.
Okay, thank you very much. I certainly hope it's not our phone, because if it is, we're going to have a heck of a problem with people calling in. Okay, all right. What I did want to do is I wanted to make that point today, but more importantly today, there is email that I have that is really backing up, and I have been very, very negligent here. I need to do that. But I want to finish up on the comment of liberty being a zero-sum game. We have lost we have lost a significant amount of our liberty. And if you look at what happens at eminent domain, for example, if you look at the fact that our property is taxed, if you look at on average, over 50% of everything we earn eventually goes to taxes, I would say that we are at least the 50% line. As far as where our liberties are, we are very, very close to being servants of the federal government. The federal government now, the spending of the federal government is somewhere around, and I still don't have the exact figure, but it's somewhere around 50 or 55% of national income. That is objectionable. That is horrific. And it's got to stop. At what point is too much? Is the government spending 100% of national income? And we are heading there very, very quickly. That's not it's not even a conjecture at this point. It's just a matter of when. We need to stop this, right? We cannot take our liberty for granted. You know, unfortunately, when we see people on in other countries. Oh, here we go again. Let me try this fella again. Yeah, hold on one second, please. This is Liberty Talk Radio. You're on the air.
Joe.
Yes.
Can you hear me better now?
Much better. Thank you.
Well, that, you know, as it might be. We hung up. We try you again, and there you are. You know what's weird about it? And I'll report to folks at Blog Talk. I'm hearing myself in my ears with, like, really severe about a two-second echo.
Okay, and we are experiencing some of that also.
Yeah, so it's hard to have a discussion. You're hearing yourself. Are you there?
Yes, and you broke up again, I'm sorry to say.
How about now? Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hey, I had called earlier. I want your thoughts on Ron Paul.
On Ron Paul?
On Ron Paul running.
Oh, on Ron Paul running. Okay, very good. Okay, very good. All righty, and I'll. You want to take that answer off the air, please? Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Okay. You want me to hang up now and I'll and listen on the air? Would that be okay?
That's entirely up to you. We can talk. That's
okay.
Fine too.
All right. Very good. Well,
I'll shut up for a second.
Okay, thank you. Well, Ron Paul, who is one of the few, if not really the only true libertarian members of Congress, he's, I'm not sure what district he is, but he is one of the congressional U.S. Senator, U.S. congressmen from the state of Texas. He is a true libertarian. He ran as a Republican and won as a Republican. There are others who are what I would call close to being libertarian, but not truly libertarian as Ron Paul is. I think it's just I admire Ron Paul. I admire everything he is doing, and I will support him 100%. I think it's wonderful that he's running. Unfortunately, he's from a small district in Texas. He's not very, very well known, and he's not funded. He's not funded to run. The probability of him winning is probably small. However, if he does get some notoriety and some space somewhere, I think he will wake up people to the true problems of America, and that being, let's stop focusing on Iraq. Iraq is an event that was perpetrated by someone who should never have been in office and who should never have been allowed to do what he did. And that's part of history now. It's over as far as I'm concerned. I think we should start talking about what we should be doing here in America. There are so many changes that have to be made. And within that, we have to solve that situation in Iraq. And I think Ron Paul is the man for the job.
You do?
Absolutely.
That's cool. Good to hear. Your thoughts, the president's announcement last week and how this ties into our, the slip hope that we've tied down for the past 5 years to our liberty.
You know, I'm sorry you are breaking up so poorly. I could not understand a thing that you said, sir.
All right, I'm going to hang.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling, and I hope this is not a problem with on our end so we have this problem again. Thank you for calling. I'm sorry for that. And I don't know what my listeners heard, but he was asking about my opinion of Ron Paul running announcement for running for president of the United States. I think he's a real long shot. I think he's the only person who actually qualifies, and he would be probably the only person that I would actually run to the polls and vote for. If you see Ron Paul's name anywhere, jump at it and support his candidacy. Okay, I'd like to read a few emails. This one's a real oldie, And it's from David, and it says, regarding the infamous groupthink which promoted the fear of weapons of mass destruction that could threaten the United States and lead us into Iraq with no exit strategy, how can we protect our government and ourselves from this emotional bandwagon effect? It seems to tend toward a larger federal government and passing laws such as the Patriot Act or this year's Defense Authorization Act, which weakens passe comitatus by empowering the president to summon the National Guard, even without a governor's authority. Dave, if I had the answer to that, I would be a trillionaire at this point. Past the billionaire point, I'd be straight to a trillionaire. If I could figure out, you know, how we can. If you look back in history, what we have is peoples never want to go to war. And every government has had to have a PR campaign to ruffle the people's feathers, inflame their emotions to go to war. And after that is done, and then usually through a lot of false flags and a lot of, you know, everything that we've done with Iraq, we've done before in other wars, and other countries have done this before. In fact, in World War I, France had these pretty girls singing songs, and they had this big thing, a big campaign going to get guys to go to the front lines, and then they, when they finally got there, you know, they would retreat and they would leave and stuff like that. I mean, people don't want to go to war. People don't want to get killed. Governments want to send people, you know, for their own selfish reasons. Now, the only way that we could avoid that is that if we really truly understood, you know, the basics of freedom and what government's roles really are. And if we could understand that, we would know that the government, the president, for example, doesn't have the right to send out troops anywhere without the written consent of Congress, which they have relinquished themselves also. Now, the way you resolve a lot of those issues is that you have to change so much of our system. For example, everyone serves one term. We have an approval voting system where everyone has a shot at winning and not just a Republican or a Democrat. We can't go through that now. That's about a two-hour program. But you have to change the system that we have now in electing people. And once you have a change in system of electing people where other people have a shot of making it, instead of everyone voting for the lesser of two evils, which means you still get an evil, which doesn't help you much, and we get the form of government that we have now. That's the only thing I have to offer you. It's a very, very frustrating thing. It's long term, and I hope this radio station becomes part of that. Our next piece of email is from Ian, and it says, I just found your show through Shoutcast and listened to the Christmas Eve broadcast. It's definitely refreshing to hear your commentary on basic rights, something it seems that is lost on most people. And you're absolutely correct. This is what I've been screaming about. And for reasons that boggle my mind, that our social contract and basic rights are to be seen as inalienable. And when they say inalienable, you know what that means? Cannot be taken away. And what has the government been doing? Has been taking our rights away, chipping away at. We have inalienable rights, and the government says, sorry, you don't have it anymore. We have it. We'll allow you to have whatever we think you should have. All right? And he goes on to say, inalienable rights and universal somehow never makes it to the politician's tongue, or even that our free media. That of our free media, I'm sorry. True, the media in many cases has merely succumbed to the money machine in attempting to get as many viewers as possible. Good show. You've gained a listener. Thank you so much. I had a little program about inalienable rights once and talked about how these rights meant that the rights that you could not be taken away. And we have those rights, and we should stand up and say, no, government, you can't have them. They're mine. You can't have them. And if you're not careful, you know, I'm going to do something about it. Right? Now, here's something from one from Jim. He says, I listened to your broadcast. You really came on strong. I like your explanation on Iraq occupation. And that's when I mentioned that we do not have a war in Iraq. We have an Iraqi occupation. and your comments about the 9/11 movement. I want to make a comment about the 9/11 movement. A lot of people associated with that movement are considered conspiracy nuts, you know, wackos and stuff like that. Now, I'll be very honest with you. I think there's a lot of things about the 9/11 movement that I think they're harping on and they're just barking up the wrong tree, because we don't have any answers and there's really not enough evidence to support some of the things that are being said. That being said, but I support what the 9/11 movement is doing. It's called the Truth Movement, and I support that because there's a lot of rot in that movement of what happened 9/11. There are still a tremendous number of unanswered questions, and a lot that I tell you, I truly question about what the government position is. The government, if anything, first of all, the government really screwed everything up. I mean, from top to bottom, and then never fired anybody, which is a beaut, right? And then, can you imagine having a company where everybody did everything wrong, nearly destroyed the country, the company, everything was going downhill, and no one was fired? That's exactly what our government did. And you got to know there's something wrong somewhere, you know, within our government. I mean, a lot of things wrong. And The 9/11 Commission, I saw a website called it the 9/11 Omission Report, and I have to agree with that. They were given constraints saying this is the only thing that you're allowed to investigate is this, this, and that, and that's it. You can't go anyplace else. Well, hell's bells. What good is that? You know, that commission did nothing. And the four women who are trying to get whose sons or husbands died in 9/11 and have been trying to get information from the government haven't been able to do so. You know, they wrote a book and there's a DVD out on them right now. That is a sad commentary. And you got to see them during that commission report when they announced the details and they sat there and all those women had tears in their eyes. They were so angry because they didn't answer any of the questions. They had like 100 questions and they answered just maybe 5 or 10 of them. Anyway, but I agree with the 9/11 movement. Go, guys, go. Go for it. All right? And he says, keep up the good work. Happy New Year. Very good. Thank you very much, Jim. Okay. This one's from Jessica. Jessica, okay, your show this morning was fantastic. Thank you, Jessica. So informative, inspirational. I'm glad you found it that way. We should never give up, she says, our liberty for so-called security. It's just an excuse to take away our rights. All right? And Jessica, you've hit the nail right on the head. And I hope you keep on listening and tell all your friends. Thank you so much for writing in. This one's a long one, and I remember this one, and I really want to read this word for word because the fellow this is Ian again, but I think it's another different Ian because I think he has a different email address. Let me check that for a second. Let's see. Yes, it's a different Ian. We had two people named Ian writing in, and that's very unusual. And he says this. He says, my views on liberty expressed by my frustration with the current administration. And here he goes this way. I declare the current administration persona non grata. As an independent body, a sovereign nation unto myself, and given the rights by birth of an American citizen, I am entitled as a governing body to voice my opinion about my representatives. The current administration is failing in its duty to provide for and protect the liberties of its citizens. This flagrant misuse of position and authority is beyond obvious. Regardless of anyone's political leaning, it is apparent that none of the representatives are looking out for the best interest of the mandates, declarations, and ideology stated in our founding documents. Constant blather about relinquishing liberty for the sake of security is a losing position and is summed up best by Patrick Henry's notable, give me liberty or give me death. This sentiment is an essential ideal from which the American ideology is supposed to stand. I would rather die a free man by the hands of a so-called terrorist than live in bondage due to the rulings and bullshit laws of my fellow countrymen. And excuse me for the language, but I'm reading it word for word, and I didn't want to take anything from it. I could not agree with you more. That's very, very well done. I particularly like the first portion in which Ian says that he is a sovereign nation unto himself. I'd like to repeat that one more time so it is indelibly imprinted into everyone's head. He is a sovereign nation unto himself. That is the purest form of individualism, and that's what our country was built on. Ian, you're brilliant. And this was a brilliant piece. I'm not going to comment on it because I can't add anything to it. And I wouldn't even suggest that I can say it any better. But Ian truly understands the concept of liberty probably better than I do. If everyone thought in his manner, we would not be in Iraq. Not every program that we turn on would have to be about some segment of some war or terrorism or Abu Ghraib, prisoners of war, definitions of enemy combatants, the oil crisis. None of that would exist. And our country wouldn't be in debt, and most likely we would still be on the gold standard. And we are the envy of the world today in many ways. In many ways, we're not any longer. But if we took his position, we would be well above where we are today. People would change just to be with us. The world would change out of desire. Ian, beautiful, thank you so much. I can't wait to hear from you again. Here's a one from Alex, and he wanted to reference an older broadcast. He says, you talked about the pride of military service and serving and the entire absurdity of thumping one's chest about it. I would suffix that remark with the need of continuing a volunteer army. There has been rumbling about a return to a draft. It will never happen. Quite a few conscripts served in Vietnam and got killed. The majority of veterans during that era were volunteers, believe it or not, and the public withdrew support for that war. A volunteer army is nice because you sign up of your own free will. So if Danny gets killed in action, it is because his voluntary tour of duty and not because he was forced to serve in a combat zone. I agree. A draft is a loss of liberty. And if you have a draft, the government can take as many people as they want, put them into service, and of course, there they go, they'll start another war somewhere and put everyone on the front lines. The only advantage of a draft, and I know this is quite a negative way of looking at it, but the only advantage of a draft is that in an unjustified war, protests start much quicker than they do when you just have a volunteer army. If we had a draft now and went to Iraq, we would have protests in the streets of America. We don't have that now because we have a volunteer army. It sort of suppresses it because people are doing it voluntarily. There was a draft, there would be people burning draft cards in the street. It would be Vietnam 2.0, and justifiably so. All right. By the way, with they as conscript, he meant enlisted person who is enlisted. All right. I have one more. And I'm sorry, I hope you don't find this too boring. I found these kind of interesting. It may not make for the best radio broadcast, but I did get behind that I want to get these out of the way. I mean, I don't want to get them out of the way. I didn't mean that. I mean, I did want to respond to them because I'm sure some people are saying, and I have some very loyal listeners out there, and they may say, why write in? You know, he never responds to them. And here's another long one, but this is going to take me a few minutes to respond to. I read this a couple of times. It said, here it is, and this is from Alex. What are your thoughts about restructuring the federal executive branch of government? Would you still prefer a presidential system over a collegial one? In the Swiss model, they have a federal republic as ours. They have a 7-member executive council whose members are first among equals. The positions of president and vice president are elected by the federal assembly and rotated annually. I want you to know, rotated annually, okay, annually. Some would point out the onus of having the billets of president and vice president elected by a Congress and the outcome dictated by whatever party majority was in power. However, in the 17th Amendment, the U.S. senators were appointed by their respective state legislatures. Voters regularly sought out the respective state candidate's stance on whom he would vote for as U.S. Senator if elected as a state delegate. In my humble view, that U.S. Senators have been regulated to nothing more than a super house of representatives. Even the states have to lobby their representative U.S. Senators these days to what they want done. Originally, senators represented state interest, which is why they were appointed by the state legislatures. The U.S. House was designated to represent the people's interest, which is why they were elected by the popular vote. I'd like to hear your input on these talking points. No right or wrong answer here, just a little flexing of gray matter. I like your program. It's spiffy. Thank you, Alex. Alex, I would renew the 17th Amendment as originally written. I think all the senators do right now is, maintain their position for years. It turns to be a dynasty, and that's the end of that, and they are totally divorced from the states altogether. I would suspect, and this is all hindsight, I would suspect that if the 17th Amendment was held as it was, where the states elected, the legislatures in the states elected the senators that would go to Washington, there would be more of a division of power. We wouldn't have the legislature would be much stronger, and states' rights would be much stronger. But I would also tag on to that. That would have to be a one-term deal. And it wouldn't be 6 years. I would never make that 6 years. I would bring that down for 2 years. All right? And then we would vote for those people to go to the House of Representatives. Because there's two senators, and then there can be, 40 representatives of the within a state, U.S. congressmen from the state. So you would vote every 2 years for new congressmen, but no congressman should be able to serve more than one term. That's another thing I would add on. And that's how you break down government and you start reducing the power of the government and you return it to the people. And the reason why those changes won't be made is because the government, the people in power, don't want to relinquish that power. They don't want you to have power. When they say, and every time they run for office, and we fall for it every time, they say, it's time for a change. Well, if it's time for a change, let's change it. And the way we should change it is that you go to Washington for one term, for 2 years, you're out, and then we'll elect somebody else. That's a change. They'll never go for that. They want to stay in there forever. Okay? But I agree with that. I agree more with the Swiss model, only because it protects states' rights and it strengthens the legislative branch in view of an executive branch, which is overstepping its bounds. And because everyone's in Washington for a long period of time, they're all part of the same system. Everyone does whatever they want, no matter what part of government you're in, no matter how much you exercise that power and abuse that power, you're one of the boys. You know, it's sort of like in the police departments, you know, in Los Angeles, when the things were bad many, many decades ago, but no one would say anything, you know. They all knew they were doing something wrong, you know. They were taking drug money and stuff like that and keeping their mouth shut. But, you know, everyone, you know, the code of silence. And we have a code of silence as well in Washington. We need to get all those people out of there, right? And we need to have the states electing the senators, and those senators only go, heck, 1 year would be fine. If the state's going to elect them, make them have 1 year, and then they come back. State of Representatives, 2 years. Every 2 years, you come back, that's it. You cannot serve 2 years. And you can't go as a state representative, then you go as something else, then you go as a governor, then you go. No. One time in office, out, give somebody else a term. This is going to be really, truly a representative government if we ever turn around that way. Okay, I think I have one more email. I had one more email somewhere. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Here it is. And we're going to make this, I guess, an hour program, because this is one that's going to take a long time. It says, I noticed, this is also from Alex, as I also noticed in your resume, that you are a member of and supporter of the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, the ACLU, and he mentions here in parentheses, he says, J. Edgar Hoover got an award from them. I guess he doesn't like the ACLU. Alex, right? You don't, right, Alex? The history I learned stated that the Founding Fathers prohibited the establishment of any state-sponsored religion, and then in parentheses he put down, nor any tithes to support the same. Norway and the UK fit this bill. There was quite a diversity of religious denominations in the United States at that time. Am I to understand that you disallow any prayer, pledges, or allegiances or reverences to God in public forum? On a personal note, I am not a particularly avid churchgoer nor religious zealot. I'll leave out the rest. I am decidedly a little piety. I don't see it as a horrid solipsistic infliction of impinging religious doctrine on anyone. I am not really won over by humanism, which allows a lot of scholasticism anyway, or the secular progressives, which I view as a lot of hot air. Cheers, Alex. All right, Alex, this is going to be a tough one, because I have to give you some background work. I look at everything from the outside in and not from the inside out. I would assume, and I'm just assuming that, well, you must be of some religious faith, and I'm going to assume for the sake of this discussion that you're Christian, and since there's a majority of Christians here in the United States, and obviously that may be a very poor assumption, but people like the fact that, well, geez, you know, it's nice to have some religion and some respect for deity in public. Why don't we do that? Well, the question that I ask is that if they were all Christians there, and the person who stood up and headed the invocation made reference to a God that they did not understand or represent, how would they feel? Well, they'd be inflamed. They'd be angry. Be a mob scene. The guy would never be invited to join them again. The problem is that when people say, you know, reference to God, which God are you talking about? There are thousands of them. What if someone got up and started talking about Zeus or Apollo? And they believe that they were gods. That's their belief. Would you then bow your head and then say a prayer for that with that person? I'll bet not. I mean, you may do it out of respect or being self-conscious. You don't want to be different than anybody else. But there would be sort of a little riot going on, wouldn't there?
What if you were a Christian and it was a Jewish person saying something? What if you're a Jewish person and a person says in our Lord Jesus Christ? Then what do you do? Now, I'd like to take that further. The government says this is a country of all people, all people, all people, not Christians that are 5'11 and weigh no more than 220 pounds. It's all people. And once you say all people, whatever your belief is your belief. It doesn't belong in a public forum. There are somewhere, and no one knows what the figure is, because no one will openly admit. I'm sorry to say that. Now, I said that incorrectly. But there are many people who will not admit that they believe, that they do not believe in any particular religion. That they believe in, you know, religion as much as, religion is no different than the story of Santa Claus. Now, there are people who, but if they're asked about it, they go, oh no, I believe in God. Well, they really don't. Now, if you wanted to find out the number of atheists, agnostics, deists, quasi-atheists in this world, in the United States, you'd come up with a pretty healthy percentage. And I'd say you would come up with a percentage of a minimum of 15%. That's a pretty big block of people. Now, once you have that many people who don't believe in a higher power, whatever you want to say, or don't know about a higher power, or can't identify the person. Now, these could be very good people. Don't get me wrong. Nothing wrong with these people. Why should you ask them to pray to a God that they don't believe in exists? You say, well, most of the... And the answer is, well, this is a Christian nation. Well, it's not a Christian nation. It's a secular nation. And because it's a secular nation, I don't believe we should pay our allegiance to anyone. Do I believe in disallowing prayer in public forum? Absolutely. First of all, what does prayer prove? I think George Collin put it right once. He said, I used to pray to God. He says, you know what? I got my way about half the time. Then I started praying to Joe Pesci. You know what? My prayers were answered about half the time. He says, even score. I mean, he was making a joke of it. But this is all a belief system. It's not based on anything. It's only your own belief. If you want to believe you pray and this happened and that's why it happened, fine, that's your belief. But don't impose that on anyone else. You know, when people say, Joe, I'll pray for you, I say, don't forget. Don't forget to sacrifice the goat while you're at it. I mean, if you're going to do something, go all the way. And as far as pledges of allegiance, to what? Pledge of allegiance to what? Our pledge of allegiance should be to ourselves and being the best that we can do, we can be, in supporting the Constitution, which means supporting the rights of the individual. Our rights, but when we say our rights, that means everyone has the same rights as ours. Listen carefully. When I say I support my rights, I'm saying at the same time, I support your right to exist as a free person. That's my allegiance. My pledge of allegiance is to myself and to you. And as we heard in our prior email, I am a government unto myself. And let me get that once again, because I want to read it, because that ties in beautifully. As Ian said, as an independent body, a sovereign nation unto myself, and given the rights by birth of an American citizen. Absolutely right. You see how all that ties in? That Ian is saying, I am a government unto myself. That is the purest form of individualism and citizenship. And that's the way it should be. And is it selfish? Absolutely. But that's the ideal. Because if it's for me, it's also for you. That means you yourself, you individually, are a government into yourself. Unto yourself. And in my government, I don't want to impose, other than constitutional rights, I don't want to impose myself upon you. Why should I impose this on anyone else? Why should I say, all right, we're going to take a moment of prayer out? Now, first of all, you are taking 1 minute of my life away. You have no right to take 1 minute of my life and say, this is how we're going to spend it. You say, well, you can just stand there for a while. You don't have to pray. You're still stopping whatever we're doing because you feel that you have to pray. You want to pray? You can pray while you're doing your work. We don't have to sit there and bow our heads. God didn't say, well, if you don't bow your head and you're not standing in a courtyard, doesn't count. I'm throwing the prayer out. It only counts 25%. You want to pray? Pray. You can pray 24 hours a day. Go on a mountaintop. Pray. Starve to death. I don't care what you do. But don't tell other people what to do. Once you do that, you're not a free person. Once you believe in that, you cannot be a libertarian. You might as subject yourself to the collective will of the citizenry. I hope, folks, this makes some sense to you. I really hope this makes some sense to you. Now, if I sound mean-spirited, I don't mean to be mean-spirited. I mean, this is meant in the kindest fashion whatsoever. What I believe is mean-spirited is when people tell you, oh, yes, let's all sit here and pray, and let's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then we'll do this, and then we'll do that. That's mean-spirited. Because that person has no concept of what they're saying or doing. And we buy it. Because the person's a nice person. You can be a nice person, but you don't have to be collectively a nice person. No, I'm sorry, Alex. I would not endorse, and I would not participate in any prayer and pledges of allegiances. And why we pledge allegiance to the flag is beyond me. We should pledge of allegiance only to our Constitution, and our Constitution says that we are a government unto ourselves. Okay? Did that go full circle? And references to God, which God are you talking about? There are thousands, tens of thousands of gods. I want to know. You got to be specific. And this is a secular nation. And if the only way to preserve religion in America is to ensure that you keep a wall, a very thick wall between church and state, and anything else is nicey words that don't work well, that abuse the Constitution by breaking down that wall, and then you have what we have now is you have the government with these faith-based programs, these religious organizations take the money, and then when the government turns around and says, by the way, what do you use that money for? Hey, say no, they say, I'm sorry, division of church and state, you're not allowed to ask that question. They play that game by both ends, burning both ends of the candle. I think that really is swift. I wish I can get away with that. No, when it comes to that, adamantly, I want religion on the East Coast, and I want the government on the West Coast. That's how thick I want the wall between the two, right? And there's no question about it. The argument that you'll always hear, and in fact, I read an article about a fellow who was a muckety-muck PhD, and I've got a guy's name, and he talked about, that there really should be no division. There is no division between church and state, and he referenced Thomas Jefferson, and this is what I'm going to get from some people. I'm going to get some email regarding this, because if you read Thomas Jefferson, on occasion he will make a reference to a deity, and the reason why he did that, because in those days, if you did not, you would be tarred and feathered, you'd never be in office, you would be rejected by the populace. And I'll tell you one thing, I didn't want Jefferson, although I didn't know him then, I didn't want Jefferson, out of the picture. He was a brilliant man. So to appease the populace, on occasion he'd say, and the deity, and the higher power, and da 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 da. But when he wrote and he talked about legislation, he talked about it in a secular manner. That's the only thing. And he supported the Constitution, unlike Madison, by the way. So, okay, enough of that. Enough of ranting. Let's see, how long have I been on the air? I don't even know. And I can tell you by this special clock that we have in here, and that we're still on the air. And we have all of 2 minutes. Okay, we're going to be signing off now. I want to thank you for listening to this very, very long broadcast. I have bought some new equipment, which is going to make things work a little bit better. Maybe we can take our telephone calls a little bit better. We'll be working with 3 screens now. I'm going to have some help in the studio at the same time. We're just going to fix a lot of things. So if you try to call in, and I've received a couple of calls last week, and I have to admit, I didn't know how to answer the phone. Would you believe it? I didn't know how to answer this internet phone, and I think I have 2 or 3 people hanging in there, and they're probably very frustrated. So next week, I have to polish up and find out. I found out how to answer the phone on the Blog Talk Radio website, but on Skype, I think I'm having a little bit of a problem. So I'm going to try to learn to do that this week. And if there's someone out there listening to me, and I never answered their telephone, and they're really hacked at me. One guy was from Portugal, Brazil, rather, because he said he spoke his language was Portuguese, and it was from Brazil, and he was calling in with a question, and I just couldn't figure out how to get back to him. His name was Vitor. That was my father's name. Vitro, rather. And I apologize to you, Vitro, and anyone else who called, and I did not answer your phone. If you try to call in and didn't get me, would you send me email and tell me that? And I will backtrack, and I promise I will get back to you, okay? It wasn't intentional. Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to play our bumper song. And here it comes. It's called And I Wonder. Here it comes. Yes, this is And I Wonder. Well, an hour broadcast. Wow, I'm exhausted. Well, I hope you enjoyed this hour, or just portion of an hour if you're with us. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Branch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And please direct your comments and questions to comments@libertytalkradio.com. And until next time, stay well and stay tuned. Thank you.